You've heard about the pregnant stingray? There's a stingray that is pregnant that has not had a male, like, celly in 8 years.
Who needs it, right? Sisters doing it for themselves. Did we haven't gotten to the bottom of it?
Nope.
What is her name? Has she?
We
she
don't
named?
Know. Oh, okay. It may have been a shark that impregnated her, which give me the shark ray. I'm here for the shark ray.
I want to know the whole consent laws with stingrays.
I agree, but I'm also here for the movie version, Shark Ray-Nado.
Yeah, Shark Ray-Nado. Of course. Ian Ziering was in that,
of
right?
Of course. Tara Reid.
Yeah, Tara Reid.
She's back, baby.
Remember Ian? Of but it's spelled like Ian.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Julian Pensavalli.
Hey, Patrick Hines.
Oh, fam. Join us on the Patreon. Hey, so much exciting stuff going on over there.
Tons.
The one thing I want to tell people, March 30th is our next drag bingo with the amazing Schwa. We do it over Zoom. It is so fun. The prize packages are crazy. So mark your calendars for March 30th, drag bingo, 7 p.m. Eastern.
Yes.
But also, you should join the Patreon because that's where you get all of the ad-free bonus episodes that we do. We're covering all the series. We just did Love Is One.
Love Is One, Natalia Grace.
Oh, my God. We're doing Natalia Grace. Like, it's 12 episodes. We're doing it in 6 episodes.
Yeah, so we did the first season in 3 episodes.
Yes.
2 Natalia episodes per 1 TCO ep. Then we're breaking it up with The Lost Women of Highway 20.
Yes.
And then we're doing Natalia Speaks, which is season 2.
I have very, very strong feelings about The Curious Case of Natalia Grace.
You have a lot of feelings.
But, you know, as a foster parent, like, I'm seeing things. Yeah. I have a lot of theories. I think not everything is not as it seems.
Right. And I just, it's in these crazy times that is 2024. It is, as much as I hate him, the insufferable Michael Barnett, I think we can all agree on him.
Yeah.
It's a little comforting that in these trying times. Yes, in these trying times, if we can't agree on much, I think we can all hold hands and agree that Michael Barnett is absolutely insufferable.
I couldn't agree more.
You know?
So it's over 450 full ad-free bonus apps for you to download and binge the second you sign up. It's patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed.
That's right.
Join us.
Yeah.
So much fun stuff. What are we talking about today?
So this is a documentary from Australia.
Yes.
It's the disappearance and murder of Lynette Dawson. This is the story that was covered on the Teacher's Pet podcast.
Yeah, which I did not listen to.
I didn't either.
Okay, that's okay. We
I feel bad.
No, it's okay.
But it was like a huge thing.
Yes.
It was like really important media that came
but
out
But we're covering it here in another way.
Okay.
Well, you look mad at me.
I'm not mad. I just feel...
Garbage belt for both of us.
I'm so sorry. I didn't listen to the podcast. I'm sorry, everyone.
Everyone has a theory about what happened to Lynette Dawson. She was a nurse, a loving mother and a loving family person.
I thought Paul being the oldest was going to propose a toast.
Oh, Lynette.
People are connected to it because they were just such a normal suburban family. And then suddenly it all went wrong.
An older man, a very attractive man, a young schoolgirl, an infatuation, a wife, and the possibility that she was murdered to make way for that relationship to flourish. I think that's what I would call the eternal triangle. And that's why it captured the public imagination.
The most important thing to us is to find her where she is, to lay her to rest.
So I got confused and I started taking notes during the coming up on, but I feel like we learned some important stuff.
Well, yeah, because it starts with Lynette's family going to this memorial bench and they're saying like, we did it, Lynn, we did it. It's really gorgeous. And I took a picture of the plaque on it because it says in loving memory and, you know, their beloved daughter, Lynn, missing 1982, age 33, forever missed.
So that was what I didn't really know what this case was about. I knew that it was about a teacher who had an affair with a student, but I thought the student was the one that got killed. No, it was that teacher's wife. And she's been missing at the time of the documentary for 40 years.
And like everyone, this takes place in Australia.
Yeah.
And so the florist who made the arrangement for the family for this memorial was in tears making the arrangement because she said to the family, I'd been following the story for years. Like it was just huge.
It was a 40-year journey. And like we learn in this coming up on, we get a lot of stuff about Lynn. They call her Lynn. Her name is Lynette, but they call her
Lynn.
The thing that really stood out to me, they describe her as being like generous to a fault. And somebody says,
when this is all over, we'll always remember Lynn as the beautiful person she was. Gentle and caring, calm, funny. The first one to ring for birthdays. If she could give one gift, she'd give 3 gifts. She's just so generous.
If she could give one present, she would give three.
She'd give three.
Do you know who that fucking is?
Who?
You.
No.
That is you. You are the greatest, most thoughtful gift giver. I wrote to the point that I wrote about it in my book.
I know,
like, I had
nice
to write paragraphs about what a great gift giver you are.
That's
that
really
describes
nice.
You perfectly.
Oh my God. Thank you so much.
It's almost intimidating what a good gift giver you are.
No. That's really sweet. Well, it's nice. I mean, Lynette was just so, people go like on and on about how generous she is. And she was the center of the family. But because she was so loved also in her community as well, like this case really, it hit home for a lot of people, whether they knew her personally or not, just because of who she was.
Yeah. And also who he was. Like, he was kind of a local celebrity. And they say that, like, in general, they were just like a normal suburban family who looked really happy from the outside. And then, like, you know, people started to see the cracks.
Yeah. And we get a lot of professional footage of this family, like sitting with, you know, Lynn sitting with her family at the dining room table, very well lit, being interviewed.
Yeah. They were that kind of family. Like, he was a little bit of like a soccer star and like a teacher. And like, he had a brother who he was really close with, and they modeled. Were they twins? Is that what it was?
Yeah, we'll get into it because someone gets really weird with Lynn about it.
I know. They go on and on and on about how, quote, good looking the brothers were. He's the fucking killer.
He's the killer.
Like,
we're not doing
oh
this.
My God.
Yeah, no.
No. He was just blonde.
I checked right out when they did that.
Okay.
I didn't even hear it. I was like, they did? No,
I know.
We're not doing
that. No, he was just like, he was blonde and he wore short shorts.
Yeah. Whatever.
I know. I know.
Like, he's the only one who's ever worn short shorts. Like, you don't get a medal for that
guy. I wear short shorts now. I got those bird dogs. I got the really short ones that I wear to the gym. I have nice legs.
Great.
I'm 45 and I have nice legs.
Show them off.
Thank you.
If you want to. If you're into it.
Travel down the road back again. Girl, Miracle Made is back. This is an actual miracle. These are the self-cooling sheets that are the only way I can go to sleep.
Yeah, I know it has just been me screaming about it for a long time, but your temperature at night can really have like one of the greatest impacts on your sleep quality, because if you're tossing and turning because you're sweating, like that's number one, disgusting. And two, no one wants to sleep like that.
I'm telling you, it's the only thing that affects the way that I sleep. And so Miracle Made, they use silver infused fabrics inspired by NASA. So they're thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. No better possible way to sleep. They're also self-cleaning. These sheets are infused with silver that presents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth.
Yeah, so that means they stay cleaner and fresh three times longer than other sheets.
Fam, Miracle sheets are luxurious, comfortable, without the high price of other luxury brands. Get rid of your trash sheets, all right? That's not Miracle Made talking, that's me.
Yeah, because everyone loves like crawling into a hotel bed. Now you can do that every single night in the comfort of your own home.
Exactly. So fam, get in on these Miracle Made sheets. Go to trymiracle.com/TCO to try Miracle Made sheets today.
And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use our promo code TCO at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%.
That's right. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
Fam, upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/TCO and use code TCO to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/TCO to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
I mean, I feel super refreshed. Can you tell?
I'm like freezing cold in my sheets. Do you know
what
I mean?
It's the best. It's the best. Greg Sims is Lynn's brother.
Yeah.
And he has this heartbreaking thing. He explains that when someone you love goes missing, you think you see them everywhere.
Yeah.
So he's describing like, going the urge to go up to strangers
because
it would look like Lynn from the back, but then it's not her.
You can almost cinematically see that.
Yes.
Like where you see him like put the hand on her shoulder and she turns around
and it's not her.
He gives this really heartbreaking monologue about what it feels like to be a family member of a person who's missing.
Yeah.
And like, you know, shameless plug here, like if you're not listening to Media Pressure,
oh my God.
You know, it's Julie Murray's podcast about her missing sister Maura Murray. I think it is the best podcast I've heard in a decade. Julie is like a really private person. But she really spares no private family story to like really get us to know who Maura was.
On Sarah Turney's network, and Sarah Turney also has experience with that.
Exactly.
Very thing, so
I really felt Greg, Lynn's brother, in this moment. Like, really, I think about this stuff a lot now that I'm so invested in this other podcast. But like, the idea that somebody in your family is missing.
You
have no closure or finality. Yeah. You never really get
like
to
you've
grieve.
You've never had a good night's sleep for the rest of your life. You know, just because you're always sort of, you know what I mean? mean? You're never fully at rest.
Yep. It's an emotion I can like totally feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And Pat Jenkins, Lynn's sister, is here and she's here with her sweet little pup.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, it's the kind of thing, of course, that takes over your whole life and your whole family.
I can remember after a year had passed, I decided I couldn't dwell on it all the time because it wasn't fair on my children. My daughter once said to me, Mum, why can't we be like a normal family? Our whole family has lived with this trauma for 40 years.
Why can't we be like a normal family?
A normal family.
You know, once again, I think about like Julie Murray, like she never meant to like be constantly working on the case of her missing sister, but she works on it every single day.
And the answer is like, this is the new normal.
Yes.
Not like I'm saying, hey, deal with it, kid. I'm just saying like that this is what it becomes like you think you see her at the grocery store. She's on the bus. She's,
I know.
You know, it's just this is it now. And that's why we're telling these stories.
And we learn about Lynn and Pat and Greg's mom and how like she just was tireless. She never, ever stopped looking for Lynn. Like, and I think about Daisy. If Daisy went missing, I would never. It would be my whole life.
For sure.
It's all I would do.
So their family has been dealing with this trauma for 40 years. And we have interviews from the family going back to 2003, which, sorry to ruin your day, everyone, that was not 10 years ago, that was 20 years ago.
I know.
Because we all see, like, 2007, we're like, wow, 10 years flies by.
I know.
No.
I'm like, the 90s were like a decade ago,
of
right?
Of course they were.
They were literally a decade.
Happy 10-year anniversary, 1995. We're doing it. Yeah, no, just had to... Sorry, everyone. But.
Well, I want to say we meet Detective Damian Loon, and he was saying, like, he was the first detective on the case back in the 80s when this first happened. And he says, in regards to Lynn,
she's never gone overseas. She's never applied for a passport. She's never applied for a Medicare card, a credit card. She doesn't bank with anybody. She's a registered nurse. She's not registered in any state or territory in Australia. And she's just basically been taken off the planet, never to be seen again.
She's basically been taken off the planet, never to be seen again.
And her family is actively, like, going places looking for her.
Yeah, I have questions about that.
Okay.
It's funny, like, in Julie's podcast, I'm talking about it a lot because there's, like, a lot of parallels here. In the last episode, she was talking to one of Maura's friends, and she made reference to, like, oh, Maura is, like, looking down on us. Like, she'd be so happy to know that we're talking. And I never heard Julie refer to Maura like that before. I didn't know what her family thought was really, where they emotionally really were with what happened to Maura. So, like, in this case, it's been 40 years. Like, you can't, and, like, we know there's no way she's out there of her own free will, having never reached out to her family. So, I think I know why she's never applied for Medicare card and why she isn't registered anywhere. But, like, I guess you can't, like, if the family's not ready to get there, then they're not.
And I don't think they're saying that they feel that today,
but
they're saying, like, back when this was happening, they were, the reason they know she never applied for a passport is because they looked to see if she did.
And when you think about what a horrendous waste of resources it is, because even the cops, even if they believe that she's dead and they just want to go find the killer, they have to at least go through the motions of, like, looking to see if she ever applied for a passport.
Because
looking to see if...
Yeah, that could be great for solving the case at trial or whatever.
Or you have to be able to prove, like, you have to be able to say, no, that never happened, so that when you get the guy, even though you don't have a body, you can still prosecute him for X, Y, and Z.
Because we know he's going to start lying.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So let's go back.
Yeah.
Lynn and Chris both went to Sydney Girls and Sydney Boys High, and that's where they met. They were both prefects in their final year.
That's a real thing. It's not just from Harry Potter.
No, it's a real thing.
What does it mean to be a prefect?
I think it's like, they have it in Derry Girls too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was just a Harry Potter thing.
No, it's sort of like, when they're on television or in movies, they're like the most annoying kid in the class.
Yeah,
don't think that's really what it is. I think you're just sort of like, it's almost like having like a class president, but not, I think.
You're
I
like
could be totally wrong.
If you're leadership. A prefect,
yeah, it's some kind of leadership role, I think.
Because it sounds like perfect. They're like the perfect kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're a prefect,
would
show
you think I would have been a good prefect?
Me. Do I think you would have been a good prefect?
Yeah.
No.
No. Why?
Because I don't think you want all that. I don't think you want the...
It does feel like a thing you have to be calm. It feels like you have to be like somebody who could like handle a crisis.
Yeah.
Somebody who would be good in a bad situation.
You kind of have to like be on top of everyone. This is all from my Derry Girls experience.
And but for example, how do you think I would be?
At 100. Just the founder and first member of the Always at 100 Club, as you as you always are.
Okay, well, okay then.
You know, they're a very good-looking couple, apparently. We have to hear this 1,000 times.
All the time. He doesn't drink or smoke. He was very physically fit, and he always looked
good.
Oh, my God.
He played rugby, as did his twin brother, Paul.
Okay.
And
you seem like you have some questions about it.
Because here's what happened. So Lynn is being interviewed about like her superstar husband, her like rugby star husband, right?
Yes.
Who also modeled sometimes, like whatever.
Yeah.
And it's all like this person is making this, and who Lynn is like a, you should be interviewing Lynn about Lynn.
Right.
Because she's amazing.
She's the Amal Clooney here.
But 100%.
You know?
But it's become like, let's talk about your husband. And then it's about how like maybe the twins are tricking people because they're twins. And she's asked like,
do you ever resent that very close relationship between them?
No, never.
The first question that people ask them is, oh, you must have a lot of fun swapping and changing around, and they've never done it. I think they've been accused of doing it on the football field.
What? Like... She's like, he's my husband and that's his brother and they happen to be twins.
Yes.
Like, what kind of interview?
And she even says, she's like, I thought that was so silly. She's like, when two people have a bond like that, you don't compete, you join in. You know what I mean? Like, you'd be part of it.
It's just... I just don't understand. So she's married to Chris. He happens to have a brother and they're twins. Like, what's the big...
It feels like you're trying to explain the concept of twins to, like, the universe for the first... Like,
I'm
no one's ever heard of twins
it
before.
To this interviewer.
Yeah.
Because they seem to think that it's... Lynn is now competing for her husband or something. Or
I know.
Like, it's very
this
strange.
This whole interview just feels like an excuse to talk about how hot the boys were.
Which I'm not into.
I'm not weirdly into
it
either.
Let's move on.
Let's move on.
By 1981, Lynn's family realizes that things are not great with her relationship with her husband.
But they also see that Lynn doesn't want to talk about it. Like, they, according to them, Lynn really wants to, like, keep up appearances.
And so the family assumes, like, all right, I guess it's a rough patch. They'll work it out.
Yeah.
And someone even says, like, no one knew how bad things really were.
Yeah. And now we meet Sue, who's a friend of Lynn's.
Sue Strath.
Yes. And she's a colleague. And Sue says that, like, Lynn's workmates were her closest friends, so we were all very close. And she says they knew that there were definitely problems at home.
Yeah, so Lynn worked at the Children's Center as a nurse. And yeah, like Lynn was super close to her coworkers. So her work friends were also her real life friends. There was no like separation of church and state or whatever.
Right.
But she was actively keeping her marriage problems from everyone. But she did mention, however, that one of her husband's students was going through a rough time. And
so just for clarity, this guy's a model, a rugby player, and a teacher.
And a teacher.
Okay.
Lynn did tell me that Chris was looking after one of his students. She had home problems and that Chris wanted to move her in to their place because she had nowhere else to go. I remember saying to Lynn, if you're having marriage difficulties, I don't think it's a good idea to bring a young student into your home.
And the student was going to be living with them. Now, I have about 3 rows of just the red flag emoji.
Yes.
I just couldn't hit it fast enough.
How is that even legal? You know what I mean?
I have a lot of questions about this moving forward.
Yeah.
But Lynn's friends are like, hey, I don't know if this is the best idea. Like, you're having some problems in your marriage. I don't know, like 16-year-old moving in with you aside, like 16-year-old student moving in with you aside. I just don't know if you should be adding just another iron in the fire when there's a lot happening with you anyway, like just kind of delicately trying to talk her out of
it. I agree. And poor Lynn, you know, Lynn, you have 3 lines of red flags. Lynn's got 23 lines of red flags.
You
she
know,
obviously knows like what's going on here.
Now the student, we never get her name, but she goes by JC. They also call her the babysitter the entire time.
Right.
But,
now, I had a question about this because I was saying, like, why is this woman's identity being protected? Because she blossoms into an adult here. And you made the point that, like, what's happening here is he's grooming her.
She's a 16-year-old abuse victim.
Which is why they never name her. And I got to tell you, they go out of their way to not name her. They blur her face. I mean, everybody is really trying to not. Apparently, she is not even named in the podcast.
Yeah, no, she just goes by JC. So this JC is in high school. She babysat for the family. And Chris is in a predatory relationship with this teenager.
Yes.
And everybody knew about it. Like, someone's like, it was an open secret. And I'm like, she is in high school.
Right.
Like, if it's an open secret, I don't know why it's okay for a teacher and a 16-year-old.
Like, why is nobody reporting? Why is nobody turning him in? I don't know what the statutory rape laws are in Australia, but I definitely think that you can't be having sex with a student.
It's still a power imbalance. It's still inappropriate. Like, I don't care. I don't care.
Like, everybody knows, but nobody does anything about it. But also, everybody knows except for Lynn.
We all knew that Chris was having an affair, and
She just said nothing. You know, Chris, my Chris, always my Chris. My Chris, I trust my Chris all the time.
I trust him. I trust him all day, every day.
Because we talk about this a lot, right? Like, no one wants to believe that the love of their life is doing this. And also, she wants to keep her marriage together as best she can. They're struggling doing that anyway. So now
they've got two young kids.
This horrible thing to it. Like, I get the denial
of
or the
course.
Like, I get
mean,
it.
I don't blame Lynn. I feel like Lynn's in a really bad situation here.
Right.
Travel. Girl, Armra is a new sponsor this month. They make up a product called Armra Colostrum.
Yeah, so you're all about your, like, immunity now, right? Because now you're on this health kick. So this is like a powder to really help you in your immune system.
So what I've learned about it, colostrum is the first nutrition we receive in life, and it's an exclusive source of all of the essential nutrients we need in order to thrive. So I'm taking it because we're in cold and flu season, and I absolutely cannot get sick. And this is the thing that makes that happen.
Yeah, and so Armra Colostrum strengthens immunity. It ignites your metabolism, it fortifies gut health, it promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and it powers fitness, performance, and recovery. So it's like everything you could possibly want to help you get through the day and feel good, it has.
Excuse me, skin radiance, that's my drag name.
There she goes. And they do third-party research, which we love, and in the trials with Armra Colostrum, it shows that its immune protective qualities begin working in under 2 hours. So it's not one of those things where you have to be like taking it for a long time to see the effects.
You know, we like quickness around here.
Yeah, so basically what the trials are saying is that you have less severe cold and flu symptoms, or you have like a faster recovery time from illness. So all you need is like 3 to 4 scoops of this Armra Colostrum a day, and there you go. It's a whole food.
Yeah. Honestly, I've just made it part of my morning routine now, and I'm feeling great. So, fam, they're offering a special offer for the TCO fam. You can receive 15% off your first order.
Go to tryarmra.com/TCO or enter TCO to get 15% off your first order.
That's TRYARMRA.com/TCO.
Yeah.
Get that gut health on. Nobody wants to get the cold or the flu.
Like sustainably sourced gut health. Okay, I'm in. You had me at hello. Do you know what I mean? Right before Christmas, Lynn comes home and finds a note on the bed that essentially is like, I'm leaving you. Speak well of me.
Yes.
Like, don't
I'm leaving you for this 16-year-old student nanny who lives with us. Don't tell, like, say nice things to the girls about
me. Yeah, don't paint too dark a picture of me.
Yeah.
Now, people are like, he left with the babysitter. They just keep calling her the babysitter. And it's like, she is also, she's being groomed here.
Yes.
To call her like the babysitter makes it seem like she's the other woman. She's a 16-year-old kid.
So we get this on-screen text now that says like this, like him like leaving Lynn in the middle of the night with a note does not last very long.
No. So they're supposed to go to Queensland, like him and this teenager that he is grooming.
Yeah.
But they don't actually go because JC, the high school student, doesn't want to go.
Right.
And like, as they're traveling there, she was missing her family and someone says rethinking the relationship, and it's basically like, get me the hell out of here.
And like, so if she's missing her family, maybe that means she has a good relationship with her family. Why is the family letting her move in with this other
she's
family?
She's probably lying.
I guess.
Or maybe that's the true part. She really was having a bad time at home and they didn't give a shit.
Yeah. And they tell us that like, Chris comes home, moves back in with the family, and Chris and Lynn now decide to go to counseling to work on the marriage.
So December 1981 is when he's like, I'm going to leave you, speak well of me. I'm going to go continue to groom and abuse this child. Now, by February of the next year, 1982, they're in couples therapy.
The coworkers see them going into therapy because like the therapy is happening at the place where Lynn works.
It's like a hospital. Yeah. So I get they have like mental health services and stuff.
And they say
they came in the afternoon into the center, and I think it was Annette and Anna, two of the girls in the occasional care room, had seen them, and Lynn was very positive. She was smiling. They walked. Actually, they do come down hand in hand down the alleyway.
Chris and Lynn are hand in hand. People think it's very positive. I'm like, wait a second. He left his family for this 16-year-old girl and only came back because she wanted to.
Right.
Like, he did not want to come back.
If
he had his
way,
he'd still be in Queensland.
Right.
Which is, I think, how you say it. Queensland.
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 Yeah.
Okay, great.
But that night, the husband calls Lynn's family to tell them how great the therapy went. And I'm like, that is, at the very least, odd.
Yes.
Maybe a red flag. Like, are you calling Judy Tipton to give her an update about the counseling you and Steve had?
No.
Like, in what world?
I also, like, feel like, and I know Judy listens. Hi, Jude. I just, if I...
Sorry,
like,
I've never addressed you, Judy. I just...
Do you have anything else you want to say to Judy?
No, I just... Okay. Judy, you agree, right? It would be weird if Patrick was calling you about, like, his therapy session with Steve.
No, we called her the other night at, like, 10 o'clock because it was their anniversary on Valentine's Day.
You called them at 10 o'clock at night?
Well, so it didn't go great. Daisy wanted to say happy anniversary to Grandma and Grandpa.
What are the three of you doing up at 10
o'clock at night? Who knows? Judy answered the phone and did not know what was going on until the call was over.
Yes.
It was a very awkward phone call.
Out of you woke her up out of a sound
very
sleep.
Tired.
Their anniversary is Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Isn't that cute?
That is cute.
I know.
The point is, you're not calling your in-laws to report about how great therapy was.
No, but now maybe I will. Okay. I'm not going to do that. But also, the mom is like, hey, can I talk to Lynn and get her take on therapy?
The first thing Mum said is, you sound a bit sozzled.
She said to Mum, my husband's poured me a lovely drink and everything is just going to be fine. And she said it with a slurred voice.
Mrs. Sims thought that unusual because Lynn and Chris weren't drinkers.
But it's weird because the mom is saying that, like, Lynn and Chris don't drink. They're not drinkers.
He's never made her a, quote, lovely cocktail. This is not what they do.
Yeah.
So it's very scary that he's calling to be like, everything's great. Don't look over here. Everything's great.
I know.
And then when the mother rightly says, like, let me speak to my daughter, please, because I don't trust you for a second. She gets on the phone and she's completely incoherent talking about how great everything is. Like, what was in that drink?
Exactly.
What did he do to her? What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Lynn has plans to meet her mother at the Northbridge Baths.
I know we have bigger fish to fry here, but doesn't that sound fabulous?
Yeah.
It's like they're
like a nice
hot
spa
springs.
Day.
Yeah.
Oh,
They show a picture. They're like, at least it seems to me that they're like natural outdoor hot springs or whatever.
Stunning.
And Chris, the husband, is working there as a lifeguard. They call him a lifesaver. I love that. Call it what it is.
Yeah. Do they still make lifesavers?
They
candy?
Do. Oh, yeah. You can get the butterscotch anywhere you go.
Why would you? Disgusting. You know what? That's your Chardonnay talking. Oh, that's infuriating. It's buttery and like hot
in your mouth. We did a Patreon happy hour last night, and the number of people in the group that were like running out to buy my piping hot Chardonnay.
Hey, enjoy it.
It's so good.
It's piping hot. But the thing is, at least I get a lot of DMs about this, and they're like, girl, I have to say, I'm three Chardonnays deep. It is warm.
It's because you didn't put it back in the fridge, Janine.
No, but Janine did. She's like, she even said, I had it in the freezer.
Janine, stay with me.
And they're like, I like it.
Okay.
You're onto something with the temperature.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, drink, like, if you like it, love what you love. I'm just saying, thank you for being honest with me that sometimes it just is warm always.
What do you think Columbo's got in his pocket? If that guy...
Are you saying because I'm wearing my Columbo shirt?
Yes. If Columbo does not have a fucking trench coat pocket full of butterscotch lifesavers, then what are we doing here?
Cigarinos.
You're my Chillerino.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, that's cute.
Anyway, this idiot is working as a lifeguard.
Lifesaver.
Life... whatever.
Right.
But like... whatever. So Lynn is going to meet her mother and bring the kids for a picnic, and it's going to be this whole, like, gorgeous day, and that doesn't happen.
Shortly after Mrs. Sims arrived at the pool, Chris receives a phone call and comes back a short time later and tells Mrs. Sims that it was Lynn on the telephone saying that she needed some time away to sort things out.
She called to tell me that she just needs to peace out for a while and, like, take some time to, like, really put things together in her mind about what's going on.
Now, just the day before, Lynn and Chris were seen holding hands, basically, like, skipping to therapy is what everyone's saying. They were in good spirits.
It's true. And he's, like, making her a fancy cocktail when they get home.
And they were, like, on this new journey together, and they were going to try to work it out. And now suddenly...
she needs to, like, take off for a while to, like, get her mental health together is what Chris is saying.
She's missing. She's left her kids. And now, remember, we see this all the time, everybody.
Yeah.
This information's coming from Chris.
Of course.
The last time Lynn's mother spoke to her is when she asked, let me talk to my daughter. I don't want to hear this from you.
Yes.
And she had, I think, she was drugged.
Of course.
By her husband, hammered. And now suddenly Lynn can't make it. And no one is talking to Lynn. All of this information is coming through Chris. Come on.
And, like, everyone is saying over and over and over again, she would never leave her kids.
Never.
She would never, ever, ever leave her kids.
And he'd call the family. And then, like, you know, days and weeks are going by. Hey, Lynn called. She needs more time. Hey, Lynn called. She's not coming home.
Says
Chris.
Yeah.
It's always Chris reporting. Like, Lynn isn't going to call her. Like, give me a break.
But there's a couple things going on here. I don't think the mom was, like, skeptical about, like, let me talk to my daughter and find out how that therapy session went. I bet the whole family was charmed by Chris.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, like, I think they're giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here because this is where I keep saying, why are you believing this?
Yeah.
Like, if my sister has a new boyfriend and they've been together not a super long time, less than a year. They just bought a house together.
Wow.
They've got life insurance policies on each other. And when, like, the life insurance policy thing happened, I was like, tell me fucking everything. You cannot call a person who does what I do for a living and be like, my new boyfriend and I just got life insurance on each other.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just
saying. What'd they say?
Well, they had good answers, I guess. They were just, whatever. Like, they're buying a house. They're taking care of their futures, whatever that means.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that, like, why is the family believing this? If no, like, you have to then believe that she's not calling to talk to the kids. She's not calling any of the siblings. She's not calling her mother. She's only communicating through Chris and just to say, I need more time alone.
Yeah.
It all sounds really fucking suspicious, no?
Of course. But I think we're in that situation where...
We have all the information.
We have all the information.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, if she really was going through something and if this is going to help her...
And the family is saying, like...
All the information that we did receive in Lynn's disappearance was coming through Chris. He would bring up Mum and say, oh, Lynn's rung me, she needs more time to think. Or he'd ring up and talk to Mum and say, oh, she's been seen at Gosford. We had no reason whatsoever to doubt him because he was a part of the family.
We had no reason whatsoever to doubt him.
Right.
So I don't know. They are also saying there's like sightings of her. People are seeing her at like fruit stands and like taking the bus or whatever. So I guess there is like that kind of corroboration happening.
But like, I'm sure it's all Chris like disguising his voice being like, I just saw or something.
Or like,
you know,
like Chris,
I mean?
Like in a long dress, like getting on the bus. Like, wait.
Chris sucks.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, if all of a sudden you were gone and Michael just kept saying she just needs more time and no one has seen you.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
No.
I'm hiring a private investigator.
Go ahead.
We know how much they love their work.
Go ahead. You should.
I will.
I would hope you would.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd hope you would. If something like that happens where you're never speaking to me, but it's like an email address you never saw before.
Exactly.
Or texting, and you know, we've talked about this so many times. You can see, like, they didn't write that.
No.
Like, in a text message, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah.
When you get a text from someone and it's like, you see their name on it, but you're like, that's not how that person writes. And you can't explain it unless you know that person.
Totally.
That it's a copy and paste job or that is someone else typing for them or something. Something is
I love your new email address. It's definitely Jillian
it's
with
definitely
a G
Jillian.
At Gmail.
Jillian for
it's
real.
Jillian with a Gmail.
It's Jillian with a Gmail.
Girl, DraftKings Casino is back. You know this does not sound like a thing I would love, but that I am completely obsessed.
Yeah, look, it's endless excitement, okay? You're loving it.
Your endless excitement.
And the cash prizes could be huge.
Fam, new players start playing with just $5 and get 100 back instantly in casino credits.
Download the app and use code TCO to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net in Connecticut. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org.
Please play responsibly. 21 plus, physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario.
Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wager required. Max $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours.
See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Restrictions apply. Weeks go by, the student, the teenager, has now officially moved in. And someone's like, they were very obviously in a relationship. Again,
yes.
She is a student. She is a teenager. Lynn is missing. And her husband is now, quote, in a relationship, which is not the case. He's grooming and abusing a teenager.
But jump to 2 years later.
2 years after Lynn's disappearance, Chris Dawson divorced Lynn in her absence. And he married the babysitter. Then they subsequently went to Queensland.
And they moved to Queensland?
And that's when they finally go on that trip that they were going to go on 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because it's 2 years later and he's been grooming her for 2 years and now she's 18. Hello?
But then it cuts to the sister, Pat, and she's like, Lynn's disappearance was always treated like an abandonment. Like, we would go to the cops and they're like, sorry, like, she's calling her husband saying she needs more time. Adults can get up and walk out of their lives whenever they want to.
And remember, Chris was, like, kind of famous and I guess, like, good looking to some people and, like, all around nice guy.
Yeah.
So it's like the cops never asked a single question because they were like, well, look at Chris. He's good on the rugby field. Like, he can't possibly do anything wrong.
That is really scary to think about.
Yeah.
That, like, an abusive husband can kill their partner and then, like, disappear the body and say, I'm hearing from them all the time.
All the time. But, like, just to be fair, to go back to it, Lynn's family is on top of this, like, pretty early on. And the point is that the cops didn't care. Like, the reason we're here that's like, oh, my God, 40 years later, there's some movement in the case thanks to the podcast. Like, that's so important because the family was begging for movement.
It's just, I understand that this is like the time before cell phones and stuff, but like you would think the cops would be compelled to say, I need, she can be gone all she wants, but if she's calling you, she can call us. So she needs to make one phone call to us and let us know that she's out there, she's fine, and she doesn't want to be found.
Just like fake it for me, cops. And
exactly.
Just be like, Chris, you're going to get, a lot of heat's going to be on you.
Yep.
If she doesn't call, like, because we're going to start looking at you, buddy. So
I mean, and it's just wild that like they just take his, everyone just takes his word for
it. I bet JC would call. I bet the 16-year-old he groomed. I bet she would call and pose as her.
Oh my God.
If that was the case, I promise you that's what was happening.
Yeah, you're right. 3 years in, the friends are like, wait a second, hasn't our friend been missing for 3 years and no one ever fucking looked for her? One of the friends writes a letter to the cops.
When I first wrote my first letter to the ombudsman, it was 3 years after she went missing. The detective came out and interviewed me then. That was the police. But all they said was, well, have you got any new evidence? And I thought, well, I'm not the police.
I'm not the police.
Right.
So no.
And I do have 3 years of begging you to give a shit.
Exactly.
Does that count? And they're like, unfortunately, no. That's a big X on the board. Sorry. And you're like, oh.
They don't care.
But literally, like, that's what's happening. Like, the friends and family for years have been begging them since Chris was like, she's fine. She told me, got to go, bye, click. Also, I'm abusing a teenager.
It makes me feel unsafe. Like, Steve could kill me and then tell people that, like, I'm calling and saying...
Well, this was 1982.
Yeah.
It's different now.
It's true. It's true. Nobody believes that I'm going to, like, wander away into oblivion. Like, can you imagine? Where would I go?
But you're on camera everywhere. You're traced everywhere.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's different.
I'm very loud, too. You know what I mean?
I wasn't going to say anything.
I mean, like, all you got to do is, like, you know, go to whatever, like, abandoned beach in Mexico Steve told people that I went to and check the local liquor store.
Yeah.
If they haven't seen me, he killed
me. It's not happening.
He killed me.
Steve just wants a nice quiet weekend.
I know.
Is that too much
but
to
ask?
But
there are easier ways to get that than murdering your fucking spouse.
There
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You think, like, I don't want a weekend away from that guy?
Just go to the beach in Mexico.
Exactly.
You'll come back.
Maybe.
You'll be bored.
Yeah, you're right.
You'll be too bored.
You're right.
Back. Sorry, Steve. So 1990.
Chris Dawson and the babysitter, they had a daughter. And in 1990, the marriage had fallen apart. And his wife, his second wife, came back to Sydney. And reported to police her suspicions that Chris had been involved with Lynn's disappearance.
By the way, my now ex-husband or soon-to-be ex-husband definitely had a role in his wife's disappearance. And I'm just like, what did he do to her in their marriage?
Right.
This was not a good marriage.
No.
It started, he was grooming her and abusing her the entire time. So, like, what kind of relationship could that really be?
Well, and she knew. I mean, like, if she knew that he'd had something to do with it, he probably told her as a threat. I made her go away. I can make you go away.
Right. Or, like, I got rid of her. Isn't that great?
Yeah. Right. But with the constant lingering, like, implication that, like, I did it once, I could do it again.
Right.
And I'm, like, a famous white blonde guy. No one questions me.
And it's been the power imbalance since the beginning. He's a teacher. She's a student. You know, he's always had that over her.
Yeah. And so the police finally bring him in 1991 for his first ever interview in the disappearance of his wife, who's been gone for 10 fucking years at this point.
Right.
And we see the interview. And of course, he denies any involvement with her disappearance. He says that JC did this to smear his character because of an upcoming custody battle over their kid.
She's just bitter, he says.
Yeah. And he says she doesn't know about the nights I lay awake all night crying my heart out, just hoping for God.
Shut up.
I was writing that sentence out, I heard you saying
shut
it.
Shut up.
Wah, wah, wah.
Like, shut up.
I know.
Poor you.
I know.
So there were two inquests into Lynette Dawson's disappearance in 2001 and 2003. Again, she went missing in 1982.
Yes.
Just saying.
Both coroners referred the matter to the DPP, saying that charges should be considered for her murder. The DPP on both occasions declined to lay charges, saying that there was not enough evidence.
They declined to press charges, saying that there isn't enough evidence. It's because no one ever investigated.
Right.
There's no evidence because no one ever looked.
But can you do it now?
Could you do it now?
I know it's a long time, but whose fault is that?
Exactly. You're looking at me like it's mine.
Not yours. Not Lynn's friends. Not her family.
No.
It's
no.
yours.
Yes.
Cops. No, right. You. Sorry. You're the only person here.
I know. Yeah, just let it out.
So it's very frustrating.
Like, it's very frustrating. They say there's lots of stops and starts in the case. Suddenly we see them digging up a pool in Chris's backyard.
Yeah.
Looking for a body, which they don't find.
So Detective Damian Loon was in charge most of the time until 2015. And then Daniel Poole took over.
Yeah.
Very similar names. This doesn't mean anything. But we went from Damian Loon to Daniel
Poole.
Right? They're similar enough.
Is that why they were digging up the pool?
No. Okay. Pool with an E. Daniel, Damien, Loon, Pool. Yeah. I don't know. Is that anything? Is that the thing? I don't think so.
I don't know if it's anything.
It's definitely
because we
not.
Never meet either of them. We get like Damien in archival footage, but he seemed to really give a shit, kind of.
No, he didn't. Then why are we here?
I guess that's true. You know what? That's a garbage
honestly,
belt for
like,
me.
Why are we here then?
Yeah.
So now that this detective Daniel Poole is here in 2015, he goes through what they had. And so now they're finding like the passport wasn't used. Her bank cards weren't used. She left to get some space, but then never turned up anywhere.
Yeah.
So clearly something happened because there's no record of her anywhere else in the world.
Right.
She also left her contact lenses at home.
Right.
Like she wouldn't do that. So like this is sort of what we have that's getting people because now the family, it's 2015. Like there's more social media. Like it's easier to get the word out about things now.
Totally.
And that's what the family's doing.
Right. So in 2015, they say the family has taken all that they can. She went missing in 1981. We're almost at 40 years.
Oh, my God.
And the family's like, they're on the verge of giving up, and they've been suffering for so long. But journalist Hedley Thomas, like, appears on the scene and convinces the family that he wants to do a podcast about the case.
And their number one question is, what's
a podcast? Them and my mother's.
Yes.
To this day, number one question, what's a podcast?
Where can I watch it?
And where can I watch it?
It's like radio for the internet.
It's like we've been saying it for 15 years.
So this is the Teacher's Pet podcast.
Yes.
And so, because Hedley Thomas was obsessed with this case and he wanted to make shit happen.
And I really hoped that the DPP would reconsider its earlier decision to not prosecute. I decided that it might be possible to find evidence, information, witnesses who hadn't talked before.
And his whole thought is that it might be possible to find new evidence. It might be possible to find witnesses who never spoke before. And they say that the podcast cracks the case open and suddenly witnesses are coming forward.
Like he wants to hand them an undeniable case.
Exactly.
He's like, I'll do that. If no one else is going to do it, I will do it. But let me do it from a journalist perspective. Like timelines are very important here.
Yeah.
So he wants to kind of do it a little bit as an outsider and kind of like fresh eyes and get this shit done.
And the storytelling of the documentary is weird here because we're just told that like it made a big difference. And then suddenly Chris Dawson is being arrested on Christmas 2018.
Because what he's finding is like all these people who never spoke, like a lot of leads, a lot of details.
Yeah.
Like he was trying to put this all together in a linear way, which is really important when solving a case. Like exactly when people called police, when things did or didn't happen, when things were filed, like when and where was Lynn when she said and did what, like all of that together is really important. And it was also a massive hit.
It was it was
huge.
Everywhere. I mean, I remember when it came out, but Chris's legal team jumps into action trying to like get the trial delayed or derailed just by saying that there's no way this guy can get a fair trial.
They're pulling every trick in the book.
Yeah, they're like, it's the most popular podcast in the world. Everyone in the world will have listened to it. It's going to affect witnesses' testimony. It's going to affect the jury pool.
Now, if I was innocent, I think I'd argue the same thing.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean? It's
totally.
2018. All this time has gone by and it's like your only evidence is a podcast that was super, super, super popular and went crazy viral and like this, like everyone listened to it. They're going to hate me.
Right.
If I didn't do it.
Yes.
I'd be like, oh, God.
Of course.
But we hate this guy.
We hate this guy. No, that's a really good point. But, like, we wouldn't be here if he hadn't done it. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, obviously he did it.
Obviously he did
it. You know?
Right.
And so Chris Dawson decides to go for what we in America call a bench trial. So there's not going to be a jury because they feel like they can't get an impartial jury. The case is going to be decided by the judge.
Because the judge, this Justice Fullerton, he's like, yeah, well, journalists have responsibility to tell the truth. Shut up, Chris. Like, we're doing this.
Yes.
Podcast or no podcast, like we're doing this.
Correct. So the trial starts in 2022. There's a huge amount of interest in the trial because of the podcast. They're saying like day one, the courtroom is at capacity. So we meet this judge, Anthony Wheely, who he wasn't the presiding judge here. He's just like a consultant for the documentary. But he says,
Chris Dawson's case was quite a difficult one. There wasn't any direct evidence of murder, no body, circumstantial case. A case of this kind, I think, is relatively rare, but they do go to trial.
These are rare, but they do happen and they do go to trial.
Yeah, and I just want to be clear that, like, the judge did agree that it would be very hard to get jurors, so that's why they call it a judge-alone trial, but it's a bench trial. So it's like, no, what, you're going to be on trial for this. Like, okay, fine, like, people, you don't want 12 other people in the courtroom, that's fine, but it's me and you, buddy.
Well, I believe in America, the person on trial gets to decide if they do the bench trial or the jury trial, and I almost feel like I would do the the bench trial. Because
you say that, yeah.
Because the judge knows the law, right? So, like, as long as you have a good attorney who can prove your case, like, juries are supposed to stick by the law, but you know a motion comes in. You got to sway 12 people. I feel like as long as, if you're on the right side of history and you've got a lawyer who can prove it, go for a bench trial.
Yeah.
Because the judge is going to do the law thing.
And they're quicker, right?
Yes.
So, like, it doesn't give the other side as much time to prepare.
Yeah.
Right? Is that always the case?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. But, I mean, I feel like I would go for the bench trial.
Right.
A term I only know because I do this for a living.
Yes, of course.
I basically went to law school.
Essentially. Not really. No. We're not going to do that. The trial finally happens in 2022.
Yeah.
Again, she went missing in 1982. But it was still a media storm, right?
Yes.
They were trying to sort of avoid that, but it was impossible. I'm like, what do you expect?
Of course.
What do you expect? The courtroom's at capacity. Cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And the prosecutor is saying, because again, like you were saying, like it's a hard case to prove with no body and no proof of murder.
And they really, all they have is a motive. Like the prosecution's argument is that on or around January 9th, 1982, Chris Dawson murdered Lynette Dawson in order to pursue a relationship with the family babysitter known as JC.
Right.
And the defense...
The defense case was that he had no motive to kill his wife. Although he cheated on her and took up with a new girlfriend, that didn't make him a murderer. And there was no actual proof that she had been even murdered, that she was dead.
And there's no actual proof that she's even dead. And it is kind of like, well, I guess that's true.
No one is talking about the fact that he abused this girl.
Right.
Like, it's not, he didn't cheat on her.
Right.
It's not like he met someone at work.
Right.
And they were having this affair.
Well, he did, except he was the teacher and she was a student.
But that's what But you know what I mean.
Right, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
A colleague.
Right.
She was a student. She was 16 years old. He was a teacher. Like, no one is talking about that.
But, like, she took him to the prom.
Well, we'll get into that.
I'm just saying that, like, everybody knew. There's
everybody
something
knew.
Like it is absolutely impossible, I think, to like take a 2024 mindset and put it back in 1982 when shit like this, people got away with this all the time.
All the time.
It was like, oh, like he's like, oh, it's a little salacious, but nobody was really dealing with like how criminal it was.
There's this guy on TikTok. I'm sorry, I don't know his name, but he recaps stuff that people were watching in like the early 2000s and the 90s.
Oh, wow.
And about, or like the Berenstain Bears, even just things that were super problematic.
Yeah.
And today on my For You page came up his recap of Never Been Kissed, the movie Never Been Kissed.
The Drew Barrymore movie?
The Drew Barrymore movie.
Which I saw in the movie theater.
You did?
I did.
Do you remember what it's about?
It's about, isn't she like a narc or something?
No. She's a 30-year-old journalist who's, quote, never been kissed.
Oh, right.
And all the men in the room, this is a recap of a recap, pardon me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
God, this is going to be bad.
I know,
huh?
But
oh, God.
It's horrifying. All the men in the room of her, like, wherever she works is like, oh my God, you must be kissed. Like, you need to go back to high school to understand the high school experience. So Drew Barrymore dresses in that famous, like, frosted lips and white feather thing.
Yeah.
Goes to high school because you could just like walk into this high school apparently. She's 30 years old. She ends up, one, having a crush on a fellow student that she's like swooning over.
Oh my God, that's right.
But then her teacher, they have this kind of very inappropriate, like they're on a Ferris wheel and they're like looking into
each other's
eyes.
It's the guy from Alias. It's the hot guy from Alias.
Sure. And she's like, he's like, you know, I shouldn't be saying this, but guys are going to be like lining up for you. And she's like, you're only saying that because you're my teacher. And he's like, actually, I shouldn't be saying that because I'm your teacher.
Oh God.
Then when it comes out that, oh, and then David Arquette is her older brother who also just walks into the high school.
I was going to say my one memory of that movie is that David Arquette is, he also pretends to be a student and he's in the cafeteria where he, like as a dare, like slam eats a bucket of coleslaw.
He's like spreading happy rumors. Right. Nice rumors to like get people to like her. So he's just like, Josie's so cool or whatever.
You guys, welcome to our podcast about the movie Never Been Kissed.
That I'm recapping someone else's TikTok. I need to get, Aaron, can we put his name? I'm so sorry. I don't know the at, but we should give him credit for this because this is how I learned about
this. Aaron, can we also get the image of him like using his hands to eat a bucket of coleslaw? It is the
gross.
Most vomitous thing in
That's
the entire disgusting world.
Regardless.
Yeah.
When it comes out that she's actually obviously 30, right. The teacher is like, I can't even look at you the same way anymore. It's like he wanted to look at her as a teenager.
Uh-huh.
And then that's the whole skit. It's not like, oh, let's ignore the fact that I was having feelings for you because I thought you were 16 and be happy about the fact that we're both 30. Like, that's the story about how she's like, I'm really 30. And he's like, oh, no, I'm mad that you're not a teenager. It's all, but like, she was also having feelings for a teenager because she liked the hot popular kid or whatever.
Oh, God. It's
and that was
cringy.
Like in the early 2000s, I think, right? When did that come out?
I loved that movie.
Well, not anymore.
No.
But the point is, at the time, it was like, oh, the older teacher, yeah, and yeah, everyone yeah. has a crush on their teacher, and wouldn't it be great if he liked me back? Uh-huh. Like, no.
No, I agree.
No.
You want to know what else is terrible?
No.
The next yes. person to take the stand in the trial, her name is Julie Andrew.
No S.
So I was going to say, my note here is she spends her entire life ruining people's nights
yeah.
when she makes a reservation at a restaurant and it shows up
Julie
and it's
Andrew,
not Julie
no Andrew. S. It's Julie Andrew. Right. No, I'm not her. That's her entire life.
That is her whole
or,
life. Why did her parents do that to her?
Or she's letting people make assumptions to get the good table.
Right, but then
and
you
then
show
they walk
up.
In, and it's then she's like, awful. Oh, Julie will be coming along any minute now.
She's got to like pull out her ID all the time and show people she actually did make the reservation. It's so...
Everyone cares as much about Julie Andrews as we do, right? That's not an us
Jim,
specific
Jiminy,
thing.
Jim, Jerry.
Anyway, so Julie Andrew.
Yeah.
Period
oh.
is a neighbor
yes.
and she testifies about she has a very important story to tell
yeah
let's not get mad at her because
no
her
I'm
name
not
is
mad
Andrew.
I am not mad at
okay.
her yeah
she testifies about something that happened in 1981 before like months before Lynn went missing.
She could see into the Dawson's yard. Chris Dawson had backed Lynette up against a trampoline and was towering over her and holding her by the shoulders and bellowing at her, and that Lynette was crying.
And he was towering over her.
And he's huge.
Holding her by the shoulders and like screaming at her. And
yeah.
Lynette was crying.
Right.
And so the defense tries to spin this and be like, Julie's lying. She's using that podcast against my client.
Apparently she's a big part of the podcast. And so like they're saying that she embellished the story to be like featured in the podcast. And now she's taking it into court. Like whatever. Like that. I mean, it's a terrifying story. But the prosecution is trying to show that he's like a violent guy
but
who
also,
probably fucking killed her.
Right. But nobody knows when something's going to be viral.
Exactly.
If Julie, Andrew,
yeah.
if Julie came after the fact and was like, oh, I have something to add.
Yeah.
Then I could understand. We can be a little suspicious. She wants to be part of the story. But if she was part of it, thinking I'm going to do this to get justice, not thinking that it would blow
up.
And be huge. No one was thinking about that in 2015.
Right.
No way.
Of course.
She told the truth.
And then there's another person who testifies who says that, like, remember that counseling session that they went to and everyone was
yes.
like, it was like puppies and sunshine and rainbows. She saw Lynn coming out of the elevator after the session and was like, there was red rings around her neck. And when she asked Lynn what happened, she said, in the elevator, he basically choked her.
Right. And I'm like, did the therapist not see this? Like, what's going on?
Exactly.
I don't understand. But again, they tried to blame the podcast. I'm like, you can only blame a podcast. Like, you can't blame the podcast.
No, right.
Like, give me a break. And another thing that they drop in is that Lynette's family is hearing so much of this for the very first time.
Yeah.
So they're hearing about, like, wait, there were more witnesses. There were
right.
more. If the cops answered the first phone call with, let me ask around,
yes.
they would have gotten, because these were all happening months before she disappeared. So if someone asks anyone, a single coworker,
right.
a question, they would have gotten at least one of these stories.
And that's why, like in 2001 and 2003, when they do the inquest and they're like, they recommend filing charges and the cops say no, it's because they never investigated.
They never investigated.
They say there's not enough evidence to charge, but they never, how could there possibly
right.
be?
Right. And now they're like, oh, it's 2001. It's all these years later. Like they're just literally saying, it's not worth it. We don't have anything anymore.
Exactly.
We didn't investigate it then. We can't do it now. Too much time has gone by. The end. Like,
right.
no.
So JC, the babysitter takes
the former
the stand.
Babysitter.
The former babysitter, former wife and mother of one of Chris's kids.
Former, like, abused teenager.
Yes, and we learn, this trial is happening after the podcast came out. She was not part of the podcast, and she's never spoken publicly, and everyone is blurring her face. Like, they really are going out of their way to, like, keep her identity anonymous.
Yeah.
But she describes their relationship on the stand as a huge power imbalance.
She said that often after biology, she would come back to her bag to find a note from him. He was her date to the high school prom. JC painted a picture of a teacher who was obsessed with her, infatuated with her, and she didn't know what to do.
She takes him to the senior prom.
She takes him to her high school prom. Like, he was like a chaperone.
No, here's my thing. Like, why
like
are
how?
The other teachers allowing this? This is her date, and no one is seeing the problem
they
here?
They took a prom photo. He looks like her father
yes.
in this photo.
Yes. How like, is this legal?
No one stepped in to help her. No one put a stop to this. I'm floored. Like, I don't understand. I don't
right.
understand how this happened.
No.
I really don't. On school grounds, during school hours.
In front
I don't
of his colleagues.
I just don't understand.
You know his fucking bro teacher, like, dude, teachers are, like, high-fiving him in
the
teacher's
faculty
lounge.
Room. Yeah. Ugh.
So they say that after year 12 in 1982, she like graduates high school and she goes up the coast with her friends and wants to end the relationship. She calls him to break up with him, and his response is to drive up the coast, quote, collect her. That means like force her into a car against her will, move her into the family home, and this is just days after Lynn goes missing.
Right. So what they're saying is that he thought that Lynn was the problem because she, like, she was telling her friends and is testifying that he was obsessed with her.
Yes.
And she didn't want that. And right. She didn't like that because she's 16 and he's not. And so I think Chris, in his fury and rage or whatever, thought, oh, if I get rid of my wife,
right,
then she'll want me. And like, no.
No. And she gives evidence on the stand that he was super controlling. He told her what to wear, what to do, who to talk to.
Yeah.
And the defense tries to come back at her, but they say that, like, she made a great witness who really didn't make things easy for the defense. Like, she really helped put a nail in his coffin.
Yeah.
A big part of the defense case rested on alleged sightings. This included things like neighbors seeing Lynette standing at a bus stop or working in a hospital or standing at a fruit market.
I saw her at the fruit stand. I'm like, yeah, I bet you saw Goody Proctor with the devil, too. Shut up.
But, that's my question. Why would they make that?
If it's phone calls, who made the phone calls?
But people are saying they actually saw her in public. Like, you're saying, like, these are people. But these are people who testified in the trial. I don't believe they did. I don't believe they saw her. Maybe they thought they saw her.
We see that a lot, though, right? Like, people sometimes just want to be involved. I don't know. I don't know if they're still part of this 40 years later. I don't know. But they didn't see her. She was not at the fruit stand.
One person said they saw her at the fruit market, to which I said, fruit market? That's a great name for a gay bar in Australia.
It is.
Fruit market.
I'm going down to the fruit market. Wink.
But the prosecution makes the great point that the only person to claim they ever heard from Lynn was Chris.
Right.
Not her family, not her mother, not her fucking children.
She never called. She needed some time away to like get her mind together, but she never called anyone herself and then never came back. No.
Absolutely
like,
not.
No. So finally, the judge has made his decision. And the judge goes through absolutely everything because there is no jury.
No, wait. The judge, before, like, he calls everyone back in to say, like, I'm going to tell you my verdict.
Yeah.
He goes through every single piece of evidence.
He goes through, like, some of it.
What I propose to do is to take half an hour for lunch.
I must say I was surprised that when lunchtime arrived, the judge announced that he was only halfway through his decision.
They take a lunch break.
He's like, you know, Chris lied about Lynn calling him and Lynn did not leave her home voluntarily. Oh, what time is it? Break for lunch, everyone? And everyone's like, excuse me?
I mean, Chris is a piece of shit, but like they're going to take a lunch break and he still doesn't know if he's innocent or guilty.
Because he's like, you don't even know. I'm halfway through this. We have a long way to go. Let's break for lunch.
Yeah.
And then we've seen this before. Every sentence sounds like he's changing his mind.
So
one sentence sounds like, is that good news? And then the next one sounds like terrible news. And then he just goes on and on and on.
They did this in Never Let Him Go, one of the series we did on Patreon, where the judge does the same thing, where they have to like...
You're like, is that good?
Is it good or bad? Like, why do they have to go through... Why can't you just say guilty or not guilty? You know what I mean?
Oh, I want to know I want to know why.
Yeah.
But I don't speak legalese that well. So I'm just kind of like... Is that good?
I know.
Every sentence sounds like it's
this
something else.
This is another situation in which, like, my God, if I was the one on trial and I had to sit through 7 hours before finding out my fate.
You know what? I would want to know, just cut to the end, tell me guilty, and then go back and explain why.
Yeah.
I can't be held.
Because it's a lot of lead up.
But, you know, this guy threw out a lot of things. Like, the idea that Chris was violent towards Lynette, that was, quote, thrown out the window, which I don't appreciate or like at all. But the judge, their point is they wanted to simplify this whole thing.
Yes.
Chris told a lot of lies after Lynette went missing. He was obsessed with JC, the teenager. And after talking about it all day long, with a lunch break included.
5.5 hours.
Christopher Michael Dawson, on the charge that you did
murder Lynette Dawson, I find you guilty. You may sit down.
We were just stunned. It just happened so quickly that the judge announced he was guilty.
And that is why I find you guilty. And everyone's like, oh my God. It wasn't even like in conclusion.
I know.
And he just goes into it. And that is why I find you guilty. Like, what?
I know. Also, the pageantry. Like, we got to talk about these outfits the judges wear in Australia. Like, the robes and the wigs. I'm not making fun of it. It's
a whole thing.
It's a whole
process. Yeah. And then, like, bada bing, bada boom, he's in handcuffs.
Yeah. And, like, so that's it. He's off to prison, I guess. And it's like, you know, his kids are grown at this point. I'd love to know, like, how JC is doing.
I know.
But it does end with what an amazing person Lynn was. It's like, we're back to the beginning, just talking about like how generous and loving and wonderful she was.
Yeah, and the children's hospital, because her brother's just like, couldn't he have just walked away? Like, we still could have had our sister.
And that's the whole thing, is that like the children could have had their mother. Like, these people who are killing their spouses for the life insurance or killing their spouses for the secret mistress or whatever, like, just get a fucking divorce.
I know. But the children's hospital that Lynn worked at sent the family this really stunning photo. And it looks like it's out of a movie. And it's Lynette with this really young patient that she's caring for. And we hear the story that Lynn would go visit her on her days off because this little girl didn't have family to come see her.
Yeah.
So on her time off, she would make sure that that little girl was loved and cared for and felt that from someone like Lynn. And
like, it's like, that is just,
that's
I could
who
stop.
She is.
Yeah.
That's the kind of person she is. And that's the kind of person that this asshole robbed of the world. What kind of good she could have done.
I know.
What she could have done, like what that means for a little kid to feel love and feel seen, and what she could have done to so many kids and families like that.
Yeah.
And also her own kids.
Exactly.
And like any other thing she wanted to do because she was awesome. And it's like, fuck you, Chris.
Fuck you, Chris.
Hot take. I hate this guy. Wow.
Oh my God, girl, what we did? What's this called?
So this is the disappearance and murder of Lynn Dawson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fam, mark your calendars. March 30th, drag bingo for everybody on Patreon at the $5 tier or above. We've done it twice already. Tell them how fun it is.
It is so fun.
It is so fun.
Schwa is amazing. Schwa sort of like perfected this virtual bingo thing during lockdown.
Yeah.
And she is just really unbelievable. She's so gorgeous and so funny, and everyone has such a good time. The chat is on fire.
The chat's crazy. She performs. There's a whole playlist going on in the background.
So fun.
The prize packs, Steve and I and you, we've all, and Natalie, have put so much thought. It's not just like you're winning like a martini glass. You're getting like a Golden Girls gift pack.
It's like
pack.
A package.
I made like a like Jillian package. There's going to be like a me package.
Yeah, we
did like mystery books. And we're having so much fun putting these prizes together.
And I do want to say also the playlist, you make the playlist.
Yes.
So Schwa like calls for requests in the chat. So you're like a major, major part of this whole thing.
Yeah.
So come join us and have fun.
So this is just one of the new things we're doing on Patreon. We're doing a virtual magic show coming up. We just did our first virtual happy hour.
Yeah,
we're going to do that again.
Plenty
it was
of those.
So fun. I'm doing watch parties on Sunday nights for the upcoming TCO Patreon episodes. So like I'm sending out basically we all like press play on our devices and then we just get in a chat and talk
about
it.
And that's not on Patreon. That's just
no,
if you're in
the
Facebook
group.
No, that's
open to everybody. And then I throw up a Zoom link at the end and we sort of just like decompress for 5 minutes.
Incredible.
It's really fun.
Incredible.
So do get in the Facebook group to find out more about that. It's the True Crime Obsessed podcast discussion group.
Yeah.
So fam, stay tuned for the trailer for Last Stop Larima and our funny and hilarious outtakes. Here's hoping anyway.
I mean, here's you never know. But you know what I do know? I know that we love you. We love you so much.
We love you, fam.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Last time I saw Paddy was December the 16th.
So he just lied to folks and off he went.
The next day I did go looking for him.
He wasn't there.
There was no sign of any disturbance.
There was a very eerie feeling.
Everyone in Larima was a suspect.
What's your relationship with Paddy?
Did you knock Paddy off?
Where's Paddy's body?
Do you know what happened? Are you involved?
I don't know nothing.
Paddy Roth, definitely not an angel.
True. What happened with Paddy? That's been on the agenda for a long time.
Perhaps Paddy was murdered and put into some pies.
What's stopping Barry from feeding to the crocodile? That's why the crocodile's fat.
There was utter hatred in this town.
Why doesn't everybody drink?
Not the point. We gotta focus.
We had the conversation a million times. You and I both in this line of work have booked like very famous people to like, you know, whatever for like various interviews and stuff. The number of famous people who are like Julia Roberts at hotmail.com. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's true.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts at Gmail. Not even a dot.
Try it. Oprah.winfrey at Oprah.com. Just try
Oprah
it.
At Oprah.
Exactly. You think it's not that? It definitely is.
It's like someone that works for Oprah.
And Gail is the one reading all the emails.
Gail. Oh my God.